Hello and welcome to Crime Theories Off the Record, the podcast series where I talk about my interpretation of crime theories. This is your host, Karen. As promised, I will venture into George Bolt's conflict analysis. To recap, conflict theory is when society is divided into groups with different resources that often exploit and struggle with one another. In this case, the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. In earlier episodes, I covered conflict theory from Marx's perspective that society is in a state of perpetual conflict because of competition for limited resources. According to conflict theory, the masses react to the unjust treatment of capitalism by committing crimes. Conflict theory suggests that violent crimes are also a result of the growing resentment among the masses. Arson, rioting, and vandalism, to name a few, are manifestations of the anger and frustration that builds up within the section of society. The theory assumes that criminal laws favor the affluent class and protect their interests. Such laws also prevent the masses from exploring better economic opportunities. The conflict results from the rich influencing the law to retain their power. The punishments for crimes, such as burglaries, are thus severe enough to subdue the poor. In response, the masses commit crimes either to make ends meet or to protest the injustice. But before I jump into Bolt's analysis, I would like to remind everyone that I am not an expert in every aspect of my field, but I have researched the topic. Well, Watson, too much Sherlock. Near the close of the 1950s, George Bolt set forth the most extensive and detailed treatment of criminological theory from a conflict perspective yet seen in criminology. Citing Simmel, Bolt, 1958, agreed that conflict should be regarded not as abnormal, but rather as a fundamental social form characteristic of social life in general. He argued, as social interaction processes grind their way through varying kinds of uneasy adjustments to a more or less stable equilibrium of balance forces in opposition, the resulting condition of relative stability is usually called social order or social organization. In this perspective, social order was not presumed to rest entirely on consensus. Instead, it was assumed to rest partly on the stability resulting from a balance of power among the various conflicting forces that compose society. The conflict between groups was analyzed in Simmelian terms as potentially making a positive contribution to the strengthening of the different groups because participation in the struggle resulted in group esprit de corps and in group solidarity. According to this analysis, it was perfectly normal for groups in a complex society to come into conflict as their interests clash, and politics, as it flourished in a democracy, is primarily a matter of finding practical compromises between antagonistic groups in the community at large. As to the nature of legal compromises, Bolt, 1958, cited Sutherland's work from the 1920s, noting that those who produce legislative majorities win control over the police power and dominate the policies that decide who is likely to be involved in a violation of the law. Bolt considered politics to be the art of compromise and insisted that the principle of compromise from positions of strength operates at every stage of this conflict process. His own theoretical interest in the forms rather than the content of such conflict may be seen in his comparison of the delinquent gang's patterns to those formed by conscientious objectors during time of war. Both were analyzed as identical patterns or social forms in which group ideology existed in conflict with established authority. Like Simmel, Bolt was concerned with the similarity of the forms of conflict rather than with normative distinctions such as the nature of the morality involved. Bolt, 1958, pointed out that much crime was of an obviously political nature. He included crimes resulting from protest movements aimed at political reform, noting that a successful revolution makes criminals out of the government officials previously in power, and an unsuccessful revolution makes its leaders into traitors subject to immediate execution. His formal analysis avoided the normative and stuck to the logical. Regardless of who was right and who was wrong, those who lost were the criminals. In this sense, their formal crime consisted of losing. Bolt, 1958, also gave attention to crimes involving conflicts between unions and management and between different unions themselves, and a statement portending what was to come in the civil rights movement in the United States during the 1960s and elsewhere in the world during the 1980s, he pointed out that numerous kinds of crimes result from the clashes incidental to attempts to change or to upset the caste system of racial segregation in various parts of the world, notably in the United States and in the Union of South Africa. Bolt undertook an intensive analysis of organized crime and white-collar crime as examples of groups organizing themselves in the pursuit of their interests, examining the strategies and tactics employed in the conflict. Off the record, and a little bit punny, Bolt's analysis of the state of affairs, what had seemed like a bold outline of the conflict perspective during the late 1950s, now struck some as in need of much more elaboration and others as far too abstract, academic, and aloof for the injustices that so angered them. And as mentioned in a previous episode, during the 1960s, several scholars, influenced by a blending of labeling theory with political theory, led to criminological conflict theory, further advancing the conflict perspective and contributing to its growing influence among criminologists at that time. If interested in learning more, join me next week, where I'll be discussing the efforts of three of the leading conflict theorists, Austin Turk, William Chambliss, and Richard Quiney. As we will learn, they were not working in isolation, but rather working in close contact within a particular social-cultural context. All of them presented the outlines of their own approaches in articles written during the 1960s and all their published book-length volumes in 1969. Their differences were to deepen to a considerable extent on influences from the various theoretical forerunners discussed previously. Thank you for listening and choosing this podcast. This episode is brought to you by Anchor. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify or whatever platform you're listening from. And don't forget to tune in for the next episode. Off the record, if you need help visualizing these theories, go check us up on Instagram at ct.offtherecord. Thank you.